To everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born, and a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rend, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. A time of war, and a time of peace. What profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboureth? What do we gain from all our work? Now I'm going to continue reading from Ecclesiastes chapter 3, and if you want to follow it, it's on page 637 of the Pew Bibles. I've read the first part, so I'm going to start at verse 9. What do workers gain from their toil? I have seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that people will fear him. Whatever is has already been, and what will be has been before, and God will call the past to account. And I saw something else under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of justice, wickedness was there. I said to myself, God will bring into judgment both the righteous and the wicked. For there will be a time for every activity, a time to judge every deed. I also said to myself, as for human beings, God tests them so that they may see that they are like the animals. Surely the fate of human beings is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so does the other. All have the same breath. The human race has no advantage over animals. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place. All come from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows if the human spirit rises upwards, and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better for people than to enjoy their work, because that is their lot. For who can bring them to see what will happen after them?
You'll have seen within chapter 3 that it is all about time. And you might think about time too, that we get on to this kind of topic. The teacher in Ecclesiastes is trying to find meaning. He's tried it here, he's tried it there. Last week, as we went through chapter 2, Elaine took us through that, trying pleasure, trying wisdom, trying all kinds of things, and still struggling to find meaning. And so we come to chapter 3, which is perhaps the best known passage in the whole of Ecclesiastes. There is a time for everything. And it set me thinking, how do we approach time? How is it that you handle time? As I thought about it, it seemed to me to be three approaches. One is that time becomes our kind of master. And you have to be at such and such a place at such and such a time. And the idea of being late for that is just so utterly horrifying that you make sure you're there incredibly early. Certainly if I was travelling with my parents when I was younger and we were trying to catch a plane, my mum would almost insist that we got to the airport a week early just to make sure that she didn't, but it kind of felt like that. Okay? But there might be bad traffic getting to the airport and it might take time getting through security and they might bring the plane forwards. They're not going to do that last bit of it. But actually, I've inherited something of that. And I hate being late. Which means that when I am late, I find it excruciatingly embarrassing. So, to give you a hypothetical situation, shortly after I'd arrived here, it was the first leadership team meeting that I could come to as senior pastor of Hartford Baptist Church. And I knew that I needed to make sure I was there in good time, so I worked out I'm going to get there for 10 minutes before the meeting is due to start. Unfortunately, I had it in my mind that the meeting started at 8 o'clock. The meeting started at 7:30. So just as I'm arriving, quite confident that I'm ahead of time, I get this phone call from Dawn going, "Are you going to be joining us for the leadership team meeting tonight?" I hate it. Even now, thinking back a year ago to when that happened, it kind of cringe inside. So that is one approach to time. A second approach, which, for want of a better term, I'm going to call the Christie approach to time, just choosing a name at random, is one where actually you are much more focused on the task. You're much more focused on the activity, and you give that activity the time that it needs, irrespective of how else that might affect everything else on your schedule later in the day. So it might be that you go, I need to make sure that my hair is done just right. And it doesn't matter if that means that we're late leaving to go to that thing that we need to leave to get. This is all hypothetical. There is nothing at all. Now, Christy is not vain at all. But actually, Christy takes a much more, should we say, relaxed approach to time because she's much more focused on the purpose of what she's doing and the actual task in hand. So time is important, but for her what's important is to give the time that's needed to something. Whereas for me, the time is what says on the watch or the clock or in my diary, and that is what drives me. And then there's kind of a third approach, which I don't know that is terribly typical here in the Western world, but sometimes when you go to other parts of the world and there's just kind of a mañana. It will happen at some point. And it doesn't really matter which, when it happens, because it will happen at the right time. It will happen tomorrow, but by tomorrow they don't mean the day after today, they just mean in the future. There are these kind of different approaches to time. I don't know whether you identify with one of those or a different one or the third one. And then we come here and we sing, "Age to age he stands and time is in his hands." And when I sing that, and when I think about those words, that kind of pushes more towards the mañana. Actually, everything will happen in its time. And when we read here in Ecclesiastes 3, there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. A time to be born and a time to die. What you'll find in here is you often have two extremes. So time to be born, time to die. And that's a kind of Hebrew way of going, and everything in the middle. So time to be born, a time to die, and that means a time to live as well. A time to plant and a time to uproot. Time to kill, a time to heal, tear down, build, weep, laugh, mourn, dance. Scatter stones and gather stones. Now I have looked across commentaries to find out this whole thing of scattering and gathering stones. And the only thing about scattering stones that any of them seem to suggest is that if you're trying to sabotage your neighbour's field, that is how you would do it. And yet I'm not quite sure that that is what the teacher is going, actually, it would be really good if we all sabotage our neighbour's fields. I'm not quite sure that's what where that's going. I haven't been able to really get a hold on what's being said there. Time to embrace and a time to refrain. Hopefully Donald Trump will learn the latter. Time to search, a time to give up, a time to keep, a time to throw away, a time to tear, a time to mend, a time to be silent, a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war, a time for peace. There is a time for everything, a season for everything, from beginning to end. Every moment of life, there is a time for it. And yet, I suspect most of us, mostly in the Western world, we kind of live in a rush. I've got to get the next thing done. I've got to get the next thing done. I know when Christy and I went on honeymoon, we went to Ireland, to County Cork, and we just found that there was a different pace of life between the Isle of Dogs, urban London, and rural County Cork. Oh, well, it'll happen at the right time. That was supposed to be an Irish accent. Apologies to anyone who can do a better one, or indeed is from there. We're constantly driven to the next thing, and you find you sit down to eat a meal, and you're wolfing it down because you've got to get to the next thing. Or you're out sort of just walking through the town of Hartford, and someone in front of you will have the temerity just to, without signalling or anything, just to stop and look in a shop window. You're in my way, move, move. We're always moving on to the next thing, the next thing. We're driven, we're pushed forwards. Well, actually, there's a time for everything. And within that perspective, actually, everything is beautiful in its time. That's what we find when we come on to verse 11. He has made everything beautiful in its time. And I think this verse as well, it's one that we often reach in and grab. Not particularly everything's beautiful in its time, but it goes on to say, he has set eternity in the hearts of men, or the hearts of people. And that's one of those verses that often just gets grabbed out of Ecclesiastes and taken completely out of context. Because there's something about that that says, actually, as human beings, we long for something more. If all we have is this, I don't mean Hartford Baptist Church when I do that, if all we have is this life, where you're born, maybe you have a family, maybe you don't have a family, maybe you work, maybe you don't work, but actually all we have is these moments, our 80 years and 10 or however many are allotted to us. If that's it, it's meaningless. That's kind of the point that he's getting at here. We have something in us that says that can't be all there is. There must be something more. And yet we have this problem. We're longing for a bigger picture, yet they cannot begin to fathom what God has done from beginning to end. We have this thing in us, eternity in the hearts of people, that longs for something more, and yet our scope, our vision is limited. Now I think as people of faith, we kind of go, well, yeah, we do have a picture that goes beyond this life and that kind of goes back into history a little bit, but still it's kind of a limited perspective. We still see one of the pictures I came across in a book was it's like if you've got extreme short-sightedness and you're going to have a look at this beautiful tapestry in some stately home somewhere, but you've got to be about that close to it to see it. And so you're there staring at this tapestry and you go, that's beautiful, but I don't know what it is, because you're too close. You can see that detail, but you can't grasp the bigger picture. And when you consider eternity, I don't know whether anyone here feels they've got a full conception of eternity from beginning to end. No, I didn't think so. We're too close. We see our bit of the detail, but we can't get back and see fully the bigger picture. And I thought to illustrate that, we would have a quiz. I can see you're excited already. What I've got, and we're going to see this, on the screen, we're going to get pictures of things to do with food. They're all things that you would eat, or at least that you would put in food to give flavour to that food. But they're close-up pictures, sometimes extremely close-up pictures. Just in case anyone gets overexcited, there is no prize. It's just we're going to put some pictures up. If you think you know what it is, just call it out. We're not going to bother about putting hands up or anything like that. We'll just politely call it out. So our first one. A star anise, absolutely right. So you'd normally expect it to be a kind of a full star shape, and it's got little seeds in it. You drop it into, well, we had a chili con carne for lunch today, and I know Christy had put some of those in, and I think she managed to fish them all out again before we ate, because if you bite into it, it's just like a bit of wood. It's not nice, but it gives a wonderful aniseed-y or licorice-y kind of flavour to what you eat. So that's, I thought that one would be a fair, I knew someone would get that one. Any guesses? It is a cauliflower. That's absolutely right. A really close up on the cauliflower, particular type of cauliflower, but you can kind of, you can still see that structure getting narrower and narrower and narrower, and you still get the same structure over and over again. Some of you may know about fractals. Cauliflowers are kind of a little bit like that. If you don't know about fractals, don't worry. Next one. I kind of thought this looked like a deformed mouth when I first saw it, with those teeth that were coming together, but it's not a mouth. Seeds in some kind of pod. It is seeds in some kind of pod. Not quite. No, no, it's much, much smaller than that. It is a chili pepper. Not one of the ones we've grown in our garden, but it could be that kind of thing, those seeds, but we're just not used to seeing them quite so big. Oh, we lose the big picture. Now the next one you'll all immediately, I know, recognise as a tulip, but it's not a tulip. Yes, I know you can cheat, David. I'm not asking you for any answers, because the computer will already show what the next thing's going to be. Can I think of anything else that might be purple flowering? Broccoli, absolutely. It's purple flowering broccoli. And when you get right in close, you get those kind of pictures, which I think are just beautiful. I thought that was rather lovely. I thought that one was rather less lovely. Is that bacon, somebody said? I don't know exactly what type it is, but it is just raw meat. And they're those kind of strings of muscle fibres. See, when you look at it like that, it's not quite so appealing. Even if it is bacon, which is universally appealing as far as I'm concerned. Okay, let's go even closer. I suspect this is something that many of you will encounter on a daily basis. That's sugar, cereal, rock salt, none of those. Not cheese, no. Bread. Not bread. You're all thinking way too big. Rock salt was probably about the right sort of size. No. what we have here, instant coffee. That's what you're putting in your mug and pouring hot water all over. So when you look at these things so close up, they don't quite have the same appeal anymore, do they? Okay, next one, very, very precious. Possibly for its weight, one of the most valuable things on the planet. Saffron, absolutely right. So if you're wanting to make it give a nice flavour to things and have it a lovely yellow colour, then that is what you would put into it. It does look a bit like a sweet, but it's really not sweet. It is salt, that's absolutely right. That's a single grain of salt looked at very, very close up. And I thought that either looked like white chocolate or one of those takeaway food boxes. Sugar, absolutely right. And now I will be amazed if anybody gets the next one. But doesn't it look appetizing? A little bit of a clue, if you weren't having sugar and you were getting rid of all the sugar from your diet, you might use this instead. Sorry? It's not honey, no, it's much, much more artificial than that. This is an artificial sweetener, this is aspartame. So if you ever have one of those diet drinks, that's what's in it. And when I was looking at these pictures, it kind of said, doesn't it just look like it's covered in dandruff? I drink quite a lot of these diet drinks with no discernible effect. But so I stick an awful lot of that in my mouth. Puts me off a little bit. Final one then. What was that was? It is a strawberry. That's right. Again, when you start to look at it close up, those kind of things that you kind of know, there's tiny little hairs on it, and you see them closer up, it starts to kind of be unpleasant, because we're looking at stuff in its such minor, tiny detail, and yet, everything is beautiful in its time. And when you see a beautiful, perfect strawberry, and that was the best picture I could find of a strawberry, kind of, to me, that just draws me in and go, I want to eat that. Because I can see the whole thing. But it's like that with time. We see our bit of it. We've kind of got historical things that can go back maybe 3,000-4,000 years of human history. We can look ahead and perhaps anticipate something of what might happen in the next 50 or so years. And I suspect if we do that, we'll find in 50 or so years how wrong we are. But we see a tiny fraction of the whole of eternity. Michael this morning was talking about God's plan for the salvation of the earth that was formed before the beginning of time. God's plan runs through the whole of eternity, but we see a small fraction of it. As we saw a small fraction of a strawberry, and then we see the whole thing, and we go, oh, that looks lovely. But you see that little bit and we miss the beauty. We miss what it's truly all about. But when we can grasp the bigger picture, the bigger perspective, we see that actually everything does become beautiful in its time. And as the teacher in Ecclesiastes goes on to say, I know there is nothing better for men than to be happy and do good while they live. We may not grasp the full picture, but actually we can still be happy. We can still do good while we live, even if we can't quite get that full picture. And without the full picture, we're kind of left that everything seems a bit meaningless. But when we can get that, we find that there is something more. But it still leaves us with some questions about time. We've seen that time is in his hands. And that was the best picture I could find to illustrate time being in someone's hands. I thought it was a rather nice one. But But it still leaves us some questions about that time. And one of those is about perhaps where many of us spend such a large proportion of our time at work, toiling. And what this passage is saying is actually, well, even there, toil is in his hands. So in verse 9, what do workers gain from their toil? I've seen the burden God has laid on the human race. Later on, nothing better for people to be happy, do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink, find satisfaction in all their toil, because this is the gift of God. Sometimes, and I've got to be honest, even with what I do, there are times that you approach your work and you're not altogether thinking, oh, this is a gift of God. Some of you may relate to that. Obviously, most of my job, I know it's a gift of God. I love what I do. I'm so grateful to God for calling me into this. But there are moments where it doesn't feel that way. Where it just kind of feels like a burden, not a joy. And yet work is part of what God has created. Way before the fall of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, he gives them a job to do, to tend the garden, to care for it. Work is part of what we are created to do. It's something that God looked at and said, it is good. And so we can find satisfaction in it. However, we also need to acknowledge that actually our work covers a short space of time. And much of what we do is not eternal in its consequences. I know a number of you have taught, and it's a brilliant job, and you teach children and they learn, and it can affect the whole rest of their lives. Brilliant. But it's still a relatively finite space of time. Some of the things that I teach can actually affect people for their life on earth and beyond. But actually, in terms of the major impact of what I do, it's still relatively finite. Our work is so often temporary, whereas God's work is truly eternal. It's truly perfect. It's truly awesome. Everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it, nothing taken from it. God does it so that people will fear him. That's not, scared of God. That's that sense of awe and reverence for God. So toil is in his hands. The other question that comes up is about testing, about judgment. Something that I hadn't noticed when I was reading this and preparing. Until I listened to Sheila reading it out. Sometimes hearing something out loud, it brings something different. We start at the beginning of the chapter, a time for everything, a season for every activity under the heavens. And then later on, we get, in verse 17, there'll be a time for every activity, a time to judge every deed. And yet so often that sense of judgment is something that we want to put it off. We don't want to be tested ourselves. And yet, when it's other people, we have that sense that testing delayed or judgment delayed is kind of justice denied. And what this is saying is that when we see things in the light of eternity, actually, in God's timing, everything will be judged. Everything will be tested. Everything will come under justice. Including me, including you, including Jesus. But what we know is that when Jesus comes under that judgment, he will be found innocent in his own right, and yet he was declared guilty because he took our sin onto himself. And through that way, grace prevails. Otherwise, none of us could stand. Because on the face of it, we are just like the animals, as it says here. We're born, we live, we die. We go from dust and we go back to dust. And yet there's this little glimmer in verse 21 that perhaps there's something more. Who knows if human spirits rise upwards and if the spirit of animals goes down into the earth? Maybe with humanity there is something different. It's not a fully blown, worked out theory of resurrection and eternal life here, but there's just a glimpse that this thing of eternity in the human heart, this longing for something more, points to an eternal relationship with God. So let's seek to have God's perspective, or as much of it as we can grasp, of time, toil, of testing. They do all begin with T, which is how Baptist preachers should do it, 3 points, all beginning with the same letter. But when we grasp those things, we see that actually they are beautiful in their time. Justice will prevail. Work can bring satisfaction, and time is in his hands. Let's pray.